This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of May 27th, 2019. I'm Mason King. Well, it's that time of year, folks. If pomp and circumstance brings a tear to your eye or an aching sensation in your wallet, you very likely have a child graduating from high school in the next few weeks. Now, sending your kid off to college is a huge milestone for students and parents, and if you're not careful, it also will be a millstone hung around your neck for several decades. The average student loan borrower owes close to $30,000 when the student graduates from college. Now, how can you avoid the worst of it? You plan. Hopefully you plan. Hopefully the planning begins many, many years before the child is flipping his or her high school tassel. But guidance is welcome at any stage of the game. So with me in the podcast studio today, we've got the big gun, IBJ columnist Pete the Planner, to talk about the things both parents and college-bound students should be thinking about and planning for. Welcome back.
I'm excited to be back.
Now, to borrow a dramatic convention, let's look at the three distinct acts from the perspective of both the parents and the students. Before the student goes to college, the period while the student is in college, and then 10 years after graduation. And let's just real quick insert a quick anecdote. You probably will not be as fortunate as the current class of Morehouse College.
There's a lot going on there. If you haven't heard the story yet, Robert F. Smith, who is a billionaire hedge fund manager, was the speaker at Morehouse and said, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to pay off this graduating class's student loans, which early estimates are about $40 million for a class of between 300 to 400 students. But Mason, I've been reading a lot about, first of all, I saw the story. Let me get a couple points in here. I saw the story and I thought it was beautiful. And my first sad thought was, man, people are going to start beating this up for some reason or another, because people can find problems with everything. So then I started doing a lot of research on it. And I'll tell you, it's not as simple as we all want it to be. We want a nice, clean story of that's great. And by the way, it is great. And none of the issues revolving this story revolve around Robert Smith. But there's some really interesting things going on. This idea that how far does this offer extend? Is it just the student loans? Is it the parent plus loans? What if the parents borrowed from their 401k or a home equity line? Does that count? What about the kids that were supposed to graduate but had to drop out a year before because they could no longer afford to go to college? There's all sorts of things going on here with this story that I find interesting and really plays into what we're talking about today.
See, I thought in my head, oh, this is simple.
Me too. Yeah. I wanted it to be simple. I still want it to be simple.
Well, yeah, and there's a whole other conversation to have about just the affordability of college in general and how that's a barrier to people who aspire to rise above their standards.
There's this idea that not only do you need a college degree to, you know, progress in your career, which I don't know if I agree with, but the other side of it is you need an expensive college degree to progress in your career. We recently had a person call your money line, our organization, who we basically convinced her and her daughter to send the daughter to a community college, which saved them $13,000 a year for the first 2 years of college, effectively saving a mother, a single mom and daughter, $26,000 over a 2 year period by making the tough choice of saying, I don't know what I want to do. How about I figure it out at a community college as opposed to figuring it out in a dorm room?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where this discussion begins, is when are you going to have the tough moment as a parent and a child? Are you going to have it before they go to school or after? Which brings us to our Dickens-esque format of the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future. So let's get after it.
Yeah. What questions are parents asking you right about how to pay for college?
I think, and I guess this is a good enough time for a disclosure, I do help Indiana College Savings Authority with 529 savings ads, from time to time. So let me just get that out there. So anything I'm going to tell you is not influenced by the fact that they pay me to be in commercials. The number one question I get is, how should I fund college? Should I start a 529? Should I use a Roth IRA? That's the first question. And then question 1A is, what is my real priority, retirement or college? And I think that really should be the first question. And I think it's a very simple answer. Your number one priority is retirement. It is not college, because you cannot finance retirement. You can't go to the retirement office, which, by the way, Mason, there is no retirement office. But if you went to one, you can't say, all right, I have an 800-point credit score. Let's get this thing started. You can't borrow. There is a means to finance a college education. There is no means to finance retirement when you get there. So if you're working backwards on, you know, bookends of your financial life, far and away, 100% priority is retirement. But a parent's heartstrings always tell them otherwise.
Absolutely. Full disclosure.
Please do.
I have a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
You have 3 kids.
I have 2 that I know of.
My fault.
Yeah.
I didn't do my research. You have 2 kids, though, and that's plenty.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
My gut instinct is, don't worry about me. Pay for the college. Get him going. Launch him off best I can, which will be 15 years from now. And worry about me later. You're saying not a good strategy.
I want to be empathetic to that idea. And I generally am on a regular basis, even to my own desire to do that. But I'm also very pragmatic in the sense that what you're suggesting doesn't work at all. Because the average student loan debt for parents of graduating seniors is now higher than the average student loan debt for graduates.
Ooh.
Think about that.
Yeah.
So the average parent now is more in debt for the 2019 class than the students themselves who are leveraging that degree to be able to pay back that education. And that is not good because your prime earning years, your last 10 or 15 years in the workplace, should not be dedicated to paying off a house you're not living in. And that's what really scares me about this, is that parents are not having the tough discussion pre-college. And here's the tough discussion, Mason. Hey, we don't want student loans, and so we're not going to say the deadliest phrase in all of college planning, which is, we'll figure it out. Because when a student gets into a school that's like a real monumental occasion, it's very emotional. Mm-hmm. It's you know, sometimes it's the first kid in a generation in the whole entire family's history to go to college. And so oftentimes parents just find the words come out of their mouth of, eh, we'll figure it out. No, you won't. You won't figure it out. And if you do, you're going to end up deep in debt and the kid's going to end up deep in debt. So we always recommend that the tough discussion needs to be before the mistake is made.
Okay, so when does that discussion take place?
Very frankly, I think when your kids are super young. I mean, in elementary school, you sort of plant the seed in sort of a joking way of like, hey, you'll go to college and then you'll go out on your own. You can't move back in with mom and I or whatever. My daughter's 10, and if you ask her what she's doing after college, she'll say, I don't know, but I can't live at home. And it's sort of funny and it's sort of cute, but I do this because roughly 42% of non-students 18 to 34 years old still accept financial assistance from their parents. 42%. And
wait, one more time.
42% of non-students who are 18 to 34 years old still accept financial assistance from their parents. That's tough. And Mason, the ultimate nightmare, if I can jump ahead, and we'll jump back. This is how it happens when I'm on this podcast. I'm very sorry.
You're fine.
What ends up happening is, let's say you don't have the tough discussion about what is affordable. We'll get into that more in a second. And so then the student has student loans, the parent has student loans, the student can't afford to live on their own, they move back in with the parents, and then now you've got two entities who are stressed, in debt, who are in this situation together, and then you can never get the kid out of the house. The concept is called boomeranging.
Okay, here's what I'm doing. I am saving money. So I will vouch for, at least in my personal situation, the 529 plan.
Okay.
Tell everybody what that is real quick.
It is a college savings program that each state administers one, you know. And so in Indiana, if you live in Indiana and you contribute to it, you can get a state tax credit. If you put up to $5,000 a year in, you get $1,000 state tax credit. And then that money goes tax deferred, meaning you don't pay taxes as it grows. And when you take that money out for a qualified education expense, you don't pay tax on the withdrawal. So it's a tidy place to save for college. I mean, think of it like a 401k for education. So you're doing the right thing. I mean, that is the first step.
We're not saying don't pay for college. We're saying be ready.
Well, you raise a really interesting question here, because oftentimes parents are like, I'm going to talk tough. You're on your own. Okay, cool. But it doesn't work out that way, because the parents' finances impact how much student aid the student gets. Okay, so if the kid wants to go to an expensive school, the kid will likely cap out on federal student loans by their sophomore or junior year. So now you've got half of a degree finished, tens of thousands of dollars of student loan debt. And the only way the student can go back is if the parents co-sign or take on Parent PLUS loans. And that's where the blind will figure it out falls apart every single time. Mm-hmm. Because it becomes about affording the first year and not about affording years 3 and 4. And that's how you get kids that have to transfer, or you get kids that have no degree and a ton of debt, and then the parents are like, wow, maybe we should have had a better plan.
Now I'm scared and confused.
Well, that's how most people end up when they leave me. Yes.
So what do you tell them?
Okay, so here's the thing. There needs to be sort of like a three-prong approach to this. It starts with a savings plan. For a placeholder, we'll just call it the 529, right? It can be a Roth IRA if you want, but I'd prefer a 529. The second part is that you would need to look at your cash flow the years your child is in college. And what can you make different during that time frame so you can actually cash flow the cost of college? Okay.
So what does that mean?
I'll give you my personal example. When my kids are in college, we've structured so our mortgage will be paid off before they go to college. Exactly the August that my daughter goes to college, right? Her freshman year. That means that not only will we use our savings that we've been saving aggressively for college, but then if we are short, we no longer have a mortgage for the first time in 15 years. And what we can do is then use that monthly payment that we were paying the mortgage and redirect that money immediately to the bursar's office and deal with college that way. So we actually know our budget going into college. And too often we as a society and parents, we become our own underwriters of student loans. Because student loans are so easy to get, it is up to us to decide if it is a good risk to take. And many of us just rubber stamp it and never say, is this a good idea? Because we're so used to, when we borrow money, someone else dictating whether it's a good idea, that we just blow past the idea that it is our responsibility. Mm-hmm. So prong one, save for college. Prong two, set up your finances so things disappear off your expense ledger during the period of time which you would like to have that cash. And number three, start having the serious discussions 16, 17, 18 years old about what the student's financial life will look like upon graduation if they choose one school over another. If you choose a private over a public, or a public over a community college, and really start to get them to understand what that looks like.
What can your high school age kid do to prepare financially for college?
I'm not a quick tips sort of guy, but sometimes I find myself in that world. I think the best quick tip, though, in this scenario is if your student can take college credit courses in high school, you can get those credits for about 1/10 of the price of what it would cost while they're in college. So I think if you're really, as a family, trying to benefit everyone involved by leaving school with as little debt as possible, I think around 16, 17, 18, you have to go to your student and say, okay, and what we're going to do here is if you can qualify for AP classes and you can get college credit, we're going to invest in that now because we're going to save 90% of what we would have had to pay for those credit hours. So getting them involved that way.
So much for Act One. We're going to move into Act Two here in a second, but let's take a quick intermission. This is the IBJ Podcast. We'll be back in 50 seconds.
The IBJ Podcast is sponsored by Nimbo IP, Indiana's top cloud solutions provider for voice, data, IT, and network security. Nimbo IP has proudly served Hoosier businesses since 1989. Let its innovative solutions put your business on the right path, plan, and platform for the future. Nimbo IP has been named one of America's best VoIP providers by Enterprise Networking Magazine. Call them today for a complimentary technology assessment at 317-574-1000 or visit them on the web at www.nimboip.com. Nimbo IP, your solutions in the cloud.
Okay, we're back with the IBJ Podcast. We're talking with Pete the Planner about paying for college. Now let's move on to Act Two. The years in which your student is in college. We might have touched on this a little bit, but what should parents be doing financially during the 4 years, hopefully just the 4 years, that the student is in college?
if they've taken the stance like I plan on of cash flowing a part of college and they've done the work and put in that work, then that requires a priority shift. I think where people generally get in trouble in their different stages of their financial lives is as their priorities shift, their spending actually doesn't. So we say, you know, we care about our kids' college education the most, but we're still going out to eat all the time, or we're still taking big vacations and those sorts of things. And so we are gatherers of priorities as opposed to reprioritizers, right? That's what people get wrong. In my column this week in the IBJ, we talk about this idea that we have these stages of our lives, like when there's daycare expenses, and how the best thing you can really do is run on a treadmill financially and just like hope to survive it. But then there's another period of time in which there's no daycare costs and you've got to get while the getting's good. And if you don't, what you've done is just added new priorities and not changed your finances.
My memory of college was that I suddenly had a bunch of incidental expenses. And so I was on the phone to mom and dad. Hey, what about these books?
Yeah.
what about this food? What do you counsel parents when they start getting that kind of shakedown?
Shakedown is just oddly appropriate there, isn't it? Yeah. I think it's, again, it's about trying to create a young adult that understands that we all have finite number of resources. And where parents go wrong is they don't have the discussion before they go to school of what their assistance will be, what they have to figure out. The big mistake that I see when kids are in college is that parents enable and perpetuate the family lifestyle on the student while they're a broke college student. And that has huge ramifications post-graduation, because when you are 17, 18, 19 years old, theoretically, your parents are in their peak earning years. And you are the beneficiary of that. Family vacations, where you eat, holidays. And so your lifestyle has creeped up within their income. And so when you go and try to replicate some semblance of a lifestyle when you're on your own, you're going to go back to what you're used to. But you don't have the resources for that. You can't afford that in any way, shape, or form. And parents can start to tamp that down by not having these expectations that people continue at a certain lifestyle. Do that in college, because it gets much uglier post-graduation.
I want to bring up something real quick. The conversation I had with a friend who has two kids in college and another on the way down in Bloomington. He was kicking himself because he thought, man, what I should have done is I should have bought an investment property in Bloomington. And so my kids could live there during college, and then I could rent it out later. Is that a case-by-case kind of thing, or good advice or bad advice?
If you can make it happen. I mean, I think anytime, that's a very reasonable thing to do, but there's the flip side, right? That's the, are you the sort of person who can be a landlord and manage owning a property and all of that? But yeah, man, that's a reasonable strategy. I got nothing wrong with that.
Now, let's talk a little bit about preparing kids for suddenly becoming pretty much financially aware. And I'm just going to filter it through my own experience. First, a couple of weeks I was in college, I got a credit card. Because
free t-shirt, or what do you get? Mountain Dew?
I think it was a three t-shirt.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think my credit limit, this is 85, was like $500.
Okay.
And then within a couple of years, I was in collection.
Sure.
Should you send your kids to school with credit cards? Should you tell them do not, under any circumstances, get a credit card?
Everything I've given you so far is reasonably fact-based with a little bit of opinion sprinkled in. This is strictly opinion, okay? What I'm about to say. I like to distinguish the two. I don't think you should send your kid to school with a credit card, and I don't think you, and I definitely think you should dissuade them from getting one. People say, well, they need to build credit, so when they get out, they'll have credit. You can solve that other ways. I just think the risk reward is wonky there. There's just way too many risks.
Should you rescue the kid who just finds himself in a big hole?
No. But again, I'm just trying to be as honest as I can. I'm a 41-year-old dad of a 10 and a 7-year-old. I don't have an 18, 19, 20-year-old, so I can talk tough now. And I know at previous times in my career, I've talked tough about particular topics, and then I find myself faced with it. I'm not so tough anymore. I'm more of a tickle fighter. And so in this situation, I will just say the sooner you can facilitate a failure financially, the better. Because otherwise, there's going to be financial failure for your offspring. You want it to be when they're in college. You don't want it to be when they're 30 or 35 and you have to bail them out there. We see that all the time. The time for failure financially is college. You've got to let them fail.
Should I, as a parent, tell my kid, you got to graduate in 3 years?
I don't think the pressure to graduate in 3 years is as strong as the pressure you should put on someone to not graduate in 6 years. I think 4 is a pretty good standard thing.
Full disclosure, I did 4.5.
And I guess my wife, because of student teaching, did 4.5. Everyone's situation is different. It's funny, as an advice person, I try to get further away from these big blanket sweeping statements of, you're dumb if you do it in 6. It's like, well, I don't know your circumstance, right? Mm-hmm. I grew up in upper middle class. Like, I'm not going to talk tough on that.
So let's go to Act 3. What should we be concerned about 10 years after graduation?
It's really 8 to 10, right? So I think the perfect goal for any graduate is to be out of debt by the time they're 30. Unfortunately, because of the amount of student loan debt that people are taking on, we've gone the opposite direction. We've gone to income-based repayment. We've gone to a lot of deferrals and those sorts of things where people are in their deep 40s still dealing with student loan debt. So not only should that impact where you go to school and the discussions you have with your parents pre-college of what can I get out of by the time I'm 30, but that is the ultimate goal, because if college loans are really changing people's habits around marriage, which theoretically and the data points to that they are, if people are changing their habits around home ownership, then what we need to do is to give them a path in which they can, like a politician now all of a sudden, we can get them a peg. We need to provide a path for Americans in which they can be out of debt by the time they're 30 and then become a homeowner sometime in their early 30s in a 15-year mortgage and be out of that debt by the time they're 50. Mm. And then you're smooth sailing, right? So I just don't think people look far enough ahead. I love looking 10 years ahead and say, what will this decision do for us in 10 years? And most parents and students don't do that. They just go, I'll have a degree. Well, what about the debt? I'll have some. That's not good enough. The biggest investment you're ever going to make in the first 30 years of your life deserves a little bit more foresight and forethought.
Okay, so let's say I'm an English major, which I was.
As was Mrs. Planner.
I think, how the heck, as an assistant for a publishing company, how am I going to make a dent in my student loans?
We are now talking post-graduation because a lot of my answers want to go to, well, you needed a car, maybe you shouldn't buy a Cadillac, right? Sort of this idea of if you have a need for an English degree, then get it at a place that is a less expensive degree, right? Post-graduation, that's where the boomerangs start flying, right? Mm. That the real impact of that is parents and students living together, and then the issue becomes, okay, fine, I gotta move back in with mom and dad. When am I leaving? And that's important. Like, all right, I graduated in May, moving back in right away. In June, I'm gonna make my first student loan payment. I'm not gonna take the 6-month grace period. It's a sucker's bet. You've gotta start paying right away. And then what I'm gonna do is I'm going to pay on my student loans the amount it would cost me to rent an apartment in the area of which I want to live, so that when I do choose to move out of my parents' house, I can pull back that amount I've paid on my student loans, but now I understand how cash flow works and I can live in that apartment. If that doesn't happen, Mason, if people don't make their minimum payment plus the cost to rent in their area, they will never move out of their house successfully because the cash flow doesn't work.
One of the things, and this takes me to actually grad school, you know, you get hit by all these folks telling you, refinance your student loan at this much lower rate. I think what happened, and I'm not entirely sure, is that I did refinance at a lower rate, but the payments reset at 10 years.
Yeah.
And I think I ended up paying more.
That happens a lot. Anytime you're going to refinance anything, especially student loan debt, you have to ask yourself, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to pay the least amount of money over time? Are you trying to pay the least amount of money in a given month? Or are you trying to shorten the period of time in which you're paying back your debt? And so that's the fundamental mistake that everyone makes. They don't ask that question. They just want a lower rate. Mm. But, well, maybe it's amortized over a longer period of time. And I'll also say oftentimes with consolidation, student loan consolidation, the forgiveness at death goes away. Right? So student loans, federally subsidized student loans, if you die, sorry about you, you're dead, your family doesn't have to pay on the student loans. But if you consolidate with certain types of programs, then your family is on the hook for your debt education. That seemed a little rough. But anyway, you're dead and your parents have to pay.
Pete, thank you so much.
Of course.
That was awesome.
My pleasure.
My thanks again to Peter Dunn, aka Pete the Planner. It's always a pleasure to have Pete on the podcast. And before you get on with the rest of your week, I want to draw your attention to a few stories in the latest edition of IBJ. John Russell tries to get to the bottom of plans for a 60,000 square foot rehab hospital in Carmel that was announced earlier this month, but without a filed site plan, building permits, or construction schedule. And the two out-of-state companies that say they're partnering on the project raise red flags, including a history of mass layoffs, at least one high-profile bankruptcy, and accusations of kickbacks and insurance fraud. Also in this week's paper, Anthony Shutley explores how local TV stations are adjusting to a huge demographic deficit in news viewership. Just in the last 2 years, viewership in the 18 to 34 age range has plummeted for evening and nighttime newscasts. Young adults are still interested in local news, but they're definitely losing interest in watching traditional TV, which doesn't bode well for broadcasters. Again, you can find all these stories in the copy of IBJ that you have delivered to your home or office and at IBJ.com as well. And remember to get unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content, just hit the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.